This is Latter-day Radio. I'm Greg Girard, and I'm back here with Jonathan Neville, attorney, lecturer, and book publisher, and an expert on Book of Mormon lands. So, Jonathan, last segment, we were talking about these letters. Apparently, Oliver was writing some letters. How were they published, and what do we know about them?
Okay, that's a good question. Oliver Cowdery was the publisher of a LDS, a Mormon newspaper called The Messenger and Advocate in Kirtland, Ohio. And in October of 1834, there was a book published called Mormonism Unveiled in a nearby town of Painesville, Ohio, that was a very strident anti-Mormon book. And so Oliver Cowdery and Joseph Smith, he said Joseph Smith helped him write these letters. He decided that he would refute that book by citing actual facts. And the book was full of innuendo and affidavits from people who claimed they knew Joseph Smith and so on. And Oliver Cowdery felt like he needed to reply to the claims made. So beginning in October of 1834, he wrote a series of 8 letters that talked about the early history of the church. It talked a little bit about the doctrinal foundations for the restoration and so forth. And as we mentioned before, segments of letter 1 are now found in the Pearl of Great Price, because he talked in detail about how John the Baptist came and how the first baptisms took place and so forth. He gave us details that Joseph Smith himself never recorded.
He was a witness. He was the only one there besides Joseph.
That's right. And some people call Oliver Cowdery the co-founder of the church, because he was there at all the critical times.
And a man of impeccable integrity, if I understand correctly. He was a school teacher. My wife's a school teacher, and those are usually always good people.
Okay, sure. So he wrote these letters talking about what's the nature of a prophet. You know, how do we know if someone's a prophet or not? He talked about Moroni's first visit to Joseph Smith. And in there, he gave us some descriptions that are unique to these letters as well. For example, he said that when Moroni came, he told Joseph Smith about the record of the Nephites, and he said that it was written and deposited not far from Joseph's house, which indicates that Mormon and Moroni lived not far from Joseph's house. That was in letter number 4. Another interesting development here was in December of 1834, Joseph Smith ordained Oliver Cowdery as assistant president of the church, which put him higher in authority than the 2 counselors in the first presidency. So next to Joseph Smith, Oliver Cowdery had the most, let's say, authority in the church.
And certainly more firsthand knowledge or secondhand knowledge, because he was right there. And as you read that footnote at the end of the Pearl of Great Price, I just remember him saying, these were times never to be forgotten.
That's right.
And you can almost feel the electricity that was in his heart when he penned those words.
That's right. Another thing that people forget is when Oliver Cowdery went down and met Joseph Smith for the first time, he had a notebook, and he wrote down the things that Joseph Smith told him.
Wow.
And we know that because David Whitmer referred to that notebook when he showed up, and he said Oliver Cowdery had written down the things Joseph told him about David Whitmer coming. We'll talk about that maybe later. But that notebook would have been critical, because Oliver Cowdery writing down the things Joseph Smith was telling him as they were translating the Book of Mormon in Harmony, Pennsylvania. We don't know what happened to that notebook. We don't know if Oliver was using it when he wrote these 8 letters. But what we do know is Oliver said he was using original documents now in their possession that we don't have today. And he was providing a level of detail about Moroni's visit, the Hill Cumorah, the baptism, these other events that are found nowhere else.
It's too bad that Oliver left the church for a time, but I think it was probably according to God's plan. He filled his mission. He was basically released, I guess you could say. And then Brigham Young took over, of course, after.
That's right. If Joseph had died while Oliver was the assistant president of the church, he would have become the president of the church. That was the function of the assistant president. And the only other person to hold that office was Hiram Smith. And again, if he had survived Carthage, Hiram would have become president because he was the assistant president. So that's how important this role that Oliver was in when he wrote these letters. Letter 7 in particular was where he talked about the Hill Cumorah that we started talking about earlier. And he was, you know, this is interesting because he was so specific. Here's some of the things that he wrote. He described the Hill Cumorah, and then he said about 1 mile west rises another ridge of less height, running parallel with the former, leaving a beautiful veil between. So he was describing the setting there at Cumorah. And then he talked about reflecting on the fact, he said it was a fact, that here, between these hills, the entire power and national strength of both the Jaredites and Nephites were destroyed. So he tells us not only the general area, but he specifies that it was between those two hills and that mile-wide valley west of the Hill Cumorah in New York where these final battles took place.
It's this historic killing zone.
Right, exactly.
And Rod actually talked about that on the 1st of June in his first broadcast that we had here on Latter-day Radio. And he talked about bones and and the fact that we didn't have evidence of bodies doesn't mean there weren't bodies there.
Right. And that's another topic we could talk about too. Yeah. But for now, I just want to emphasize that Oliver Cowdery is very specific about this. He also said that the depository of Nephi records was in this same hill. And then in letter 8, he talks in detail about how Moroni constructed the stone box. He gives us far more detail than Joseph Smith ever did. And so when I first read letter 7, I thought, where has this been all my life? You know, it answers the question unequivocally. And I thought maybe it was just an aberration. In fact, someone told me that when they first read these quotations from letter 7, the bottom of the quotation said source unknown, because they had read it somewhere, but they didn't know where it came from. Mm-hmm. Well, this came from Oliver Cowdery in the Messenger and Advocate. And then as I delved into this a little more, I discovered that shortly after these letters were published in the Messenger and Advocate, Joseph had his scribes copy them verbatim into his own personal history. And that's where you can read them today in the Joseph Smith Papers. You just go to the josephsmithpapers.org. In the search box, type in letter 7 with the Roman numerals, VII, and it takes you right to letter 7, right in Joseph Smith's own history.
Is it very long?
That's relative. It's letter 7 itself is about 5 pages long.
Okay, maybe 1,500 words, something like that?
Something like that. And it's well worth reading. All 8 letters are, but letter 7 in particular. Well, then what amazed me was, as I did more historical research on this, I found out that Joseph had told Benjamin Winchester he could publish it in his newspaper in Philadelphia called the Gospel Reflector. Parley Pratt published it in the Millennial Star in England. Mm-hmm. And it was so popular in England that they ended up publishing all 8 letters as a separate pamphlet by popular demand. They sold thousands of copies in England. And then Joseph gave these letters to his brother, Don Carlos, to publish in Nauvoo in the Times and Seasons.
So they've been published over and over again.
Yeah, and here's another interesting little tidbit. William Smith, Joseph's older brother, or younger brother, was the publisher of a newspaper in New York called The Prophet, a Mormon newspaper that was published in 1844 in New York City. And 2 days after the martyrdom in Kirtland, Letter 7 was published in that newspaper in New York, just coincidentally. Hmm. It was also published again in the Improvement Era out here in Salt Lake City. Joseph F. Smith was the editor of the new Improvement Era, and he was also the counselor in the First Presidency, and he republished Letter 7 yet again here in Utah. So it was widely known among members of the church.
So what happened to it?
Well, around 1920, this gets into the whole history of the Mesoamerican theory, but there were some scholars from the reorganized Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints who determined, based on their study, that the Book of Mormon had to have taken place in a small area in Central America, they assumed, again, because of these Times and Seasons articles. And based on that, they concluded that Cumorah couldn't possibly be in New York.
That's where the two Cumorah theory comes from?
Yeah, it is. And the idea was that the hill in New York was only the place where Joseph Smith got the plates, but it was not the Hill Cumorah that's talked about in the Book of Mormon. And that theory is prevalent. I mean, you can see it right down on Temple Square today in the Visitor Center on display, the Two Cumorahs theory. And so, but Letter 7 refutes that. Letter 7 specifically identifies the Hill Cumorah there. So my critics, my BYU friends and colleagues, and the other advocates of the Mesoamerican theory have told me and have published this that Oliver Cowdery was just speculating. It was merely his opinion, and he was wrong.
But his opinion doesn't hold as much water in their minds as people with PhDs from the University of
exactly.
from the University of Colorado or somewhere.
Well, and which is kind of funny too. It's sadly funny, but the point is that Oliver Cowdery didn't say it was his opinion. He said it was a fact. And at other points of these letters, he explains where he's speculating about something versus stating it as a fact. So it's clear that Oliver Cowdery said it was a fact. So the critics say, well, Oliver Cowdery never claimed to have a revelation. But I point out in response to that he actually visited the depository in the Hill Cumorah. And we know that from Brigham Young, Wilford Woodruff, Heber C. Kimball, and several others, that Oliver Cowdery never talked about it publicly, according to Brigham Young, but he did relate this experience to the brethren Brigham Young and others because he felt like it was important that they should know. So he and Joseph and others actually went into the depository of Nephite records in the Hill Cumorah in New York, and that's how Oliver could say he knew it was a fact that the final battles took place there. So I guess what we're trying to say here is letter 7 really settles this issue about the New York Cumorah, unless we're going to take the approach that Oliver Cowdery was not reliable, was not credible. And if we're going to take that approach, it extends to all the other prophets who have corroborated what Oliver Cowdery taught about the New York Cumorah. That's another long topic we can discuss.
Yeah.
But the point is that the scholars that promote the Mesoamerican theory disagree with Letter 7. Therefore, they say that Oliver Cowdery was mistaken, he was speculating, he was ignorant, and he was relying maybe on some tradition, where in my position was that he knew because he had actually been inside the depository in the Hill Cumorah right there in New York.
I suppose we know there aren't a lot of gold records there now, so don't go digging for them.
That's right. Well, we know that because David Whitmer and Oliver Cowdery both said the records are no longer in that hill. We can talk about that later, maybe.
Well, we've got more to talk about here on Latter-day Radio with Jonathan Neville here on 1430 KLO. We'll be back in a few minutes after these announcements. In the meantime, if you have any other thing you want to look at or study, go to latterdayradio.com.